Welcome to Talks of Camelot, Hypeable.com's podcast, all about BBC's hit fantasy series, Merlin. Thank you so much for joining us this week. It's just me, Pamela, and Selena on the call. And we will be talking to you guys about season one, episode 12, To Kill the King. We are pretty much almost close to wrapping up on our series one rewatch. So that's really exciting.
No, it's going by too fast.
I know it is, but it isn't. Like, I feel like we've been doing this forever, but it's like not in a bad way.
Right.
Anyway, we have got a jam-packed episode for you guys. There's lots to talk about, of course, as far as the actual episode is concerned. We're just going to get right into it, and we're going to move into the episode summary. Selena's going to read that for us this week, and then we'll get into our main discussion.
So in this episode, Gwen's blacksmith father, Tom, is approached by Torrin, who possesses the alchemist's stone and wants Tom's help in turning base. I almost made it without laughing. Metal into gold. Gold he intends to use to overthrow the king. The palace guards raid the smithy and Torrin escapes, but Tom is caught and sentenced to death for assisting sorcery. Morgana is appalled by Uther's callousness that he sentenced Tom to death, and after finding out that Gwen intends to meet him in the woods, she goes in Gwen's place and tells Torrin that she will help him in his plot to overthrow the king. But she is unaware that Merlin has followed her and is listening to the entire exchange. On the pretense of visiting the grave of her father, whose death she blames on Uther, Morgana rides out with the king to lead him into Torrin's trap. Torrin and Uther have a tussle in which Uther almost meets his end, but at the last minute, Morgana has a change of heart and kills Torrin, saving Uther's life. Damn it, Morgana.
I'm sure if Jess were here, she would be so angry right now.
And damn it, Merlin. I mean, seriously, what is this? Once upon a time, you don't always have to save the villains just because you're so, like, good or whatever.
It's just, they're so noble on the show.
It's counterproductive. It's stupid. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny because we'll get into this as well in the episode discussion, but this episode, you know, on the surface seems like a very Gwen heavy episode, but it really turns out to be a very heavy Morgana episode.
Yeah, actually that is very interesting because I hadn't even thought about that, but it's very true. I mean, this is the episode where Gwen loses her father. This should be all about Gwen, but really it's all about Morgana and her relationship with Uther.
So let's talk about Gwen and her father, Tom. Tom is, of course, the blacksmith of Camelot. And he, you know, it's so funny because he's kind of like this background character that we really rarely ever see. But he really does play kind of a big role in the series. I mean, most notably, he is the one that forges Excalibur. Mm-hmm. Before Kilgar breathes fire on it and makes it, you know, the legendary sword that we know from the legends. We get this really great scene right at the beginning. It's very playful and lovely with Gwen and her father. And he buys her like a button and then like shows her this new dress that he's bought her. And Gwen is kind of like questioning how they're able to afford it because, you know, they live a poor life. And he says, "You're a beautiful girl, Gwen. You deserve beautiful things." So what did you think about this exchange in general and just like any thoughts you had about their relationship? Because we don't really get to see them interact very much in the series.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a good establishing scene. I don't have any particular, I thought it was a little bit, I don't know. I wasn't, you know how like sometimes they'll use scenes really well to sort of make you feel for a character. I didn't really feel that much for Tom. I was kind of like thinking, well, that was kind of like, maybe it's because I'm not a dress girl. I was like, what does she need this for? Like, come on.
He should have been like, "You're a beautiful girl, Gwen. You deserve a beautiful sword."
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, you know, in that episode, they went to Ealdor. She had to fight with like a broom. Come on. She clearly needs one. I don't know. I thought it was cute, though.
Maybe this was Tom's plight to turn her more into a girly girl. I mean,
yeah, you know. And you know, it's good as well to establish that the two of them really only have each other, and he's the kind of like, that's just the routine of life. Like, Gwen has her job and she has Morgana and she goes home, she has her father, and that's her life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very interesting just look into their relationship for sure. But you can definitely tell that they do lead their own lives and like maybe only reconvene for dinner or something like that because they're both busy trying to, you know, just survive. I mean, there's so much like poverty that we don't see that happened, like, you know, in real life during these times because Merlin is like kind of like a kid's show, but you're probably right. They do probably spend more time apart than they do together.
Yeah.
So after this, there's a scene where Tom is just kind of like, it looks like he's working in the dead of night. And we get our first look at the villain of this week's episode, Torin, who comes in and he kind of seems a little threatening and almost menacing. But him and Tom have struck up this bargain that we find out about, where he just hires Tom to help him with an experiment. And it turns out that what he's doing is he's turning molten lead into gold using not the Philosopher's Stone.
It might as well have been.
Yes, yes. And Tom, I guess, had no idea about this before. He sees it happen before his eyes and he panics, and Torin bribes him with the gold that he makes.
Was it just me, or did this make Tom seem a little bit stupid or naive?
It did. So my question for you was that do you think that Torin threatened Tom into helping him, or do you think that he legitimately like struck up this deal with him? And
I don't think so. I think that Tom was, I mean, this is Torin. I mean, whether or not he had magic, he's clearly a really shady guy. And Tom mm-hmm. and Gwen, I mean, they're poor, but they can't be, you know, they're living in the city. They housing is expensive.
Housing is expensive in the middle of town.
But and she's the maid to the king's ward. And I'm just thinking, they can't be hurting that much for money that he would need to do. He is dealing with a really, really shady person just to get money. To me, that didn't make Tom seem like that sort of honorable, kind of very, very noble, nice guy that we're sort of supposed to think that he is.
Right.
This is going to make me sound like a terrible person, but I remember the first time I watched it, I was so horrified that Tom died. But this time I almost like, he almost had it coming. Like, I'm not going to say that what Uther did was right in any way, but I mean, considering how ruthless we know that Uther is, Tom should know better.
Right. And that's what I was kind of thinking too, and was really struggling with trying to figure out how this happened, because it just, I don't know, like when you see somebody like that who is obviously shady, like why would you say yes? So it's either Tom is either a product of naivety, or he just didn't even occur to him that Torin could be doing something as taboo as magic. Mm-hmm. You know, because it almost kind of made it sound like Tom will take any job unless there's magic involved, which is like the highest form of treason in Camelot.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, I was just like you know that this guy was up to no good. Just stay out of trouble, mm-hmm. dude.
Yeah, we don't, I mean, obviously that is not to say that we think that like,
no,
is menacing, but just that, you know, it's kind of like, well, what do you expect when you're dealing with shady people, mm-hmm. you know? But you know, maybe their house was under foreclosure or something. And it was like, Gwen didn't know. I don't know. After this, Tom is, you know, hesitating with trying to decide whether he's going to take the gold that Torin has forged from the stone, or if he's going to, you know, just walk away. And before we can even see him make this decision, Arthur and his guards burst in. I don't know how, like, I wonder if they were ticked off. It's just like, it was too convenient. Mm. You know what I mean? But they burst in. Torin manages to escape, but they catch Tom, and Arthur takes him to Uther, pretty much sealing his fate.
Yeah.
Gwen finds out that Tom's been arrested, and she runs straight to Merlin. So I thought this was interesting, because I think it speaks volumes of their friendship, that she would run to him instead of running to, you know, somebody like Morgana, who obviously has more sway. What did you think about this?
I know. Actually, that's really interesting. I think that maybe it's a case of Gwen seeing Merlin more as her equal, because she sort of has a very quick, it's her gut reaction to run to Merlin. And then once she gets to him, she's like, oh, well, you can't help anyway. Like, she almost doesn't even know why she's there. But maybe it's a combination of the fact that she doesn't want to burden Morgana, who, even though they're friends, she sees her as her superior. Obviously, she is her superior. And I also think that it's just a case of Gwen is just totally gone from Merlin right now. Like, she really is. I mean,
like, if Merlin asked her to marry him and like run away to the woods together, like, she would go.
Oh, absolutely. Like, in a heartbeat. And you know, I feel like that's just, she seeks comfort with the person that she probably secretly wants to comfort her the most. It's too bad that Merlin is so clueless.
It really is. You know, I think you're right, though. It's like, I feel like, I think Merlin really is her person. And I think everybody has that one friend that it's like, you know, deep down, they can't really help you with whatever you're going through. But it's like enough that they're there and that you told them. It almost makes it more real. It makes you feel like you've done something because you've told that person. Mm. So it's just, oh, their friendship is so beautiful. I just love it. You know, especially in this early on in the series, it's just wonderful too.
Yeah.
So after this, we get this really touching scene between Gwen and her father in the dungeons. And she's kind of, berating him for even being caught up in this whole thing in the first place, kind of like we were doing earlier on. And then Tom says, I just wanted to make a better life for us. I wanted you to be happy. And, you know, Gwen tells him that she was, but, you know, at this point,
oh,
she was.
Oh, this was heartbreaking.
I know. It's because, just like, you know, it's such a parent thing, isn't it?
Yeah. But this is exactly what I was sort of getting at with that dress scene. Like, it just seemed Tom was just totally out of sync with her because that's not what she wants.
No, you know? She just wants her dad. You know, she just wants to live her simple life with her dad, and that would be enough. Meanwhile, Morgana is taking tips from Merlin, and she's off on her super sleuthing adventure. And she goes to Gwen's house, and I'm assuming, if she was actually there to, like, snoop, or if she was there to find Gwen and make sure she was okay. But either way, she stumbles upon the stone, and when she holds
it, convenient.
I know. So this is great because when she holds it, it glows. So obviously, it's responding to her own magic. And then she hides it in her chambers. So here's my question for you. Obviously, we know she hides it because it's evidence against Tom. She realizes that it's a magical thing. But why do we think she never tells Gwen about it, or she never really tells anyone about it? You know, like, she just kind of hides it. Like, do you think she's just scared, or?
I'm not 100% sure. I would guess that she, when it responds to her magic, she sort of feels connected to it. Like, it makes her feel connected to magic, and she's curious, and she sort of has this almost childlike, I want to keep this for myself. And then whenever she finds out that, like, the stone is needed to save Gwen, obviously she gives it up without thought, which sort of just speaks to her, the goodness of her character. But you could take that in a lot of different ways, because they never do clear that up.
Mm-hmm. That's so Lord of the Rings of them, isn't it, though? Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, my precious stone. But then she's like, no, it's okay. I'll give it up for the greater good. So knowing that Tom's fate is sealed, Morgana attempts to help Tom escape, and she sneaks into Arthur's rooms, steals the dungeon key, and then gives it to Tom.
So this was such a bad plan.
It was such a half-baked plan too. She just kind of gives it to him. Like, I feel like she should know that Tom wouldn't be good at sneaking out. You know what I mean? Like, but what are your thoughts in general on this scene, and just Morgana taking matters into her own hands, very almost spur of the moment?
I wish she'd consulted someone who was better at plan making than she was, because this was just I remember this episode. I remember that Tom died, but I didn't think it was this episode. I felt like there was another, because there was the kind of the fake out in I believe it was like episode 4 or whatever, when Gwen ended up in the dungeon. And I thought there was another fake out where he survived and then he died in season 2. But this was the moment when I sort of realized that, all right, he's doomed. And it was basically, I mean, I know he was probably going to die anyway, but they might have been able to save him if they thought this through. He dies because of Morgana's actions directly, like the way he dies, you know?
Mm-hmm. It really is. And I kind of wish that they had explored that a little bit more. I feel like they glazed over it.
Yeah, but I guess point is that he would have died no matter if anyone had tried to get him out or not.
Right. At least she gave him, I guess in her mind, she gave him a fighting chance, and that's all she could do for Gwen's sake, if anything. So Tom uses the key to escape, and the warning bell sound almost immediately. And Uther kind of acts like Christmas has come early. Like he's just so, he's like, yes.
He's
like
he's guilty.
Yeah, pretty much. Because a guilty man would, I mean, an innocent man would kind of stay and wait for his trial. Originally, he promised Arthur and Morgana that Tom would have the right to a fair trial. But after Tom escapes, he tells the guards to kill him on the spot and says, the trial is a formality. So this just kind of speaks volumes to just how almost cunning and conniving Uther is. You know, like he gives all like the pretenses of being a fair king, but in reality, his mind's already made up. Mm. Morgana has a few choice words for Uther in this scene as well. She says, may I remind you that a king is wise and just. You are neither. One by one, you are making enemies of us all. And talk about foreshadowing.
Oh, I know. That was brilliant.
It really was. It kind of, it's almost like, man, like these showrunners must have had all of this planned out for so long because this is just a deliberate nod to what happens later on in the series. So yeah. I thought this was great. And what a great quote for Morgana, you know, and really wonderfully delivered as well. Uther throws Morgana in the dungeons until she can learn to respect his authority.
Didn't this scene make you so uncomfortable though? Mm-hmm. Like it really made me uncomfortable. I feel like that's just, I mean, way to just completely destroy her, you know, and that's the ultimate, like that kind of humiliation is the way to break someone like Morgana. And I mean, I know that was his intention, but I just felt that was absolutely dreadful to watch. Like it was painful to watch on her behalf almost.
It's so funny because she, out of all of the characters, I feel like that, well, in general, like the women of Merlin are so strong that something like that, I don't see how it could break them. It could be worse because you see later on in series 5 how like being trapped in a dungeon really does break her. But in comparison to when she was locked up with Aethusa to now, you know what I mean? Like this is so low key.
But this is just so humiliating.
It is humiliating. It is. But I'm saying like, I think if Morgana wasn't as strong willed of a character, like it would break her more. Like she's a very like tough princess type. Right. You know what I mean? She's not soft around the edges. And I think that's what ultimately like helps her keep her pride in these situations. Cause she's such a spitfire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're right. It is. It's so humiliating because she's, you know, she's got like this status in the kingdom. And meanwhile, Uther just strips her of it. And we see him do this a couple times with Arthur and with Morgana. And it's all about exerting his power and, you know, showing the subjects inside the castle that they're not immune.
Right. I mean, am I imagining this? Doesn't she end up in the stocks at 1.2?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. I had a memory that she did because I was like, that's like the ultimate humiliation, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that would be like, I don't know. Like this is obviously like, it is public humiliation because, you know, the guards know that she's there. Like everybody who works in the castle that she's there. But for the stocks, I mean, that would be like, that's just like the lowest of the low kind of, you know, seeing you, you know, serve a punishment that they get.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she ever does or doesn't. We'll have to see, I guess. But yeah, it's just a very interesting, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. It must all be a power trip.
Yeah.
Because I feel like at this age, you know, Morgana and Arthur are old enough that they could overthrow Uther, you know, but by him putting them in the dungeons when he chooses to, it shows the people that, you know, they're not ready just yet because he still has power over them and they're grown adults.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a power play for sure. Meanwhile, Arthur comes to visit Gwen, who is taking up, you know, refuge in Merlin's room. I guess she feels like she can't go back home. So she's in Merlin and Gaius's chambers, and he comes to let her know that even though her father has been deemed a traitor and has been executed, her job in the castle is secure and that she will maintain ownership of her house and that whatever she might be in need of, she needs only ask and he will give it to her. And then he also says that he's sorry about her father. This is the only Gwen and Arthur scene we get in this episode, which is interesting since we know that they ultimately are like the big pairing on the show. As far as canon is concerned. So what did you think about this exchange?
I mean, I was going to ask you, how much do you feel or think that Arthur is to blame for what happened, if at all?
I think, to be honest with you, a lot because he didn't rule over what Tom's fate would be, but he sealed it by bringing him to his father. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I just kind of like, I sometimes like early on in the series, I don't really understand Arthur's reasoning. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if like, if he kind of chooses to do things like this when he does, because he's in the presence of guards and like maybe the guards are more loyal to his father than they are to him. So his hands might be a little bit more tied than I'm giving him credit for.
That's what I assumed, because this is, again, one of the fun things about watching this for the second time. When the first time I watched it, I obviously wasn't that invested, or I wasn't paying attention because I was going to podcast about it later. You know, I was just watching it. And mm-hmm. I remember just all through season one, I felt like Arthur was such an ass. I felt like he treated everyone terribly. I felt like everything horrible that happened was his fault. Maybe I was also just in denial because I was, but I was a Buffy fan. So I just refused to think that Giles could be evil. But mm-hmm. watching it through now, because I know what to look for, I am seeing how powerless Arthur really is to act on the goodness that's already there. Like, he's stubborn, sure, but at this point, almost towards the end of season one, I still haven't seen any of those horrible things that I remember thinking. And I'm wondering if that comes later or if it just never comes at all. Because in this one, like, I absolutely thought if the guards hadn't been there, it would have been a totally different story. Arthur would have heard him out. He would have heard his reasoning. He would have been like, okay, I get it. You're not the villain. I'm going to go look for this Torin guy because he's clearly the one we need to deal with. But because the guards were there, and because Arthur, first of all, he has such a desire to please his dad, like, we know this. This is one of his flaws, but also just because he still believes that his father's way is the way to maintain peace in the kingdom, because that's all he's ever heard. Mm-hmm. And I think he couldn't overrule his dad. He couldn't just say to the guards, look, we're going to let Tom go or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually blame him that much, but I can see why you would.
Right. And that was my whole point I was kind of getting at, is like, I feel like you want to blame him because he did seal his, I mean, Arthur, you still see Arthur as like a figure of authority, but at the same time, you almost can't, because he kind of feels like his hands are tied. I mean, these are not his knights. If he had stumbled upon Tom with Gwen and Percival mm-hmm. and Elian, well, I mean, maybe not Elian because he would have a biased opinion, but and Leon, like, I feel like they all would have been in the mindset to have heard Tom out, not just because he's one's father, but just because he's a person. Mm-hmm. You know, and he hasn't done anything wrong yet. But because these are not his knights, it's so much harder for Arthur to do anything about it. And I think you made a really good point about how it was watching the series for the first time and how it is rewatching it now. Because I feel like I kind of went through the same thing. I mean, you start watching this show and you're in the same mindset as Merlin, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, like, God, like, how can this guy, like, be the guy he's going to be? Like, look at all these horrible things he's doing.
Yeah.
And then you get to the point where it's like, oh, my God, he's completely changed. And then you know that he is the great king he's meant to be. And then when you go back and rewatch it, it's like, well, you know what Arthur is at the end of the series. So you look for those characteristics early on.
And isn't that just a sign of fantastic acting and directing?
Because, it really is. I mean, and writing and planning.
Everything. Yes. Because that's what I find just so incredible about this show is that, I mean, for all its pretense of being a children's show, there is so much depth here. And there is depth that in a way I think it's too deep because, again, I watched it for the first time. I was practically an adult, you know, at that point. I was watching it through the eyes of someone who'd watched a lot of TV, and I didn't pick up on these nuances. I mean, this is nuances that you can't pick up on until you've watched it through, before you know these characters. But they were already there.
You know,
like,
what's
it's
so
like
funny?
Layers and layers and layers, you know?
I think that the reason that, like, and I feel like I'm kind of guilty of doing that too, it's because they market it as a children's show. So in your mind, it can't be as deep as it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, you're not looking for all of the stuff. And we should have known better. I mean, like, we come from Harry Potter land, and that's just like the ultimate, like, not children's book. You know what I mean? Like, but it's just like, it's so easy to just kind of be like, I'm going to watch this fun show, la, 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 la. Like, I don't have to think, I just have to absorb. And when you do that, you really don't think about, you know, what they're trying to set up.
And I also think, I mean, now I haven't, it's been a while since I've watched season 2 and 3 and stuff like that. And it might be that I'm going to watch those shows and find a lot of depth there too. But I, the way I remember it, those seasons, they aimed at, you know, the lowest common denominator a lot. Like, there was a lot of very lowbrow humor and maybe a bit more throwaway. So maybe that's why we're sort of surprised by season 1 being almost as good as season 5, if not as good. Because it did maybe drop a little bit in intelligence level in the middle. Like, I'm not 100% sure. You're going to have to tell me if that's a correct assumption, but
I think it was, it's easy to assume that it's, I think it's easy to assume that just because, like, in comparison, like, season 1 is so much lighter than season 5, even though it does go deeper. But I don't know. I mean, like, I really just, it's so hard. I just really think it's really has to do with the fact that, like, the way that they market it, you know what I mean? Like, you look at the way that season 1 was marketed with even, like, the promos, like, I don't know if any of you guys listening remember, it's like, it was very, like, light and magical. You know, you have, like, Merlin behind this galaxy and then
Colin Moore. Oh, I remember that.
I still can't watch those and not laugh. Mm. And then you had, like, all these promo spots for TV where it was like Merlin's Magic Corner and Colin Morgan would be there in, like, Merlin gear teaching you how to, like, trick your friends into thinking you were magical and stuff. And it was all so geared towards children that you know, you're watching this as, like,
so
an adult, you know, and, like, and you're just like, oh, it's just a fun kid show. You right. know, and so then by comparison, it's like, well, how can a kid's show be that deep? But it really isn't. You know, it just, it's kind of like, I don't know. I think it really does have to do with the marketing that we don't really think to look for these deep, intricate subplots and storylines that they might be trying to build up, because it's already, like, in our mind subconsciously, we're just like, I can't be that deep because it's for children.
But you know, now this is just good, good to keep in mind for when we start watching Atlantis and we do Under the Sea cast or whatever we could end up calling it if we podcast about that, because we're going to be able to look for these things, like, from the beginning, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, like, this is not my first time rewatching the series, but I think just because we're watching it in with the mind that we will be podcasting about it later, it's almost like we want to pick up on these little things. You know what I mean? And it's just so interesting to do that. And this is why it's so great to go back and, like, rewatch shows like this, because you really get more of an appreciation for what the story is. And I think it's also interesting too, because one of the biggest complaints from, you know, some of the more critical Merlin fans is that there's no plot and there's no character development in the show. And I think that, like, watching episodes like this and just kind of comparing them to, like, how the characters end up and how the characters began, it just completely debunks that.
Yeah.
Complaint, because it's almost, like, unfair to even say those things about the show.
Right.
Because it's all there.
Unless there is some kind of, like, tabula rasa with all the characters in season 3 or season 2 or whatever, where some of this stuff doesn't seem to matter that much. But look at season 5. All of this matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, where were we? We had this really wonderful conversation. We went off on a tangent.
Whoops. Those are the best ones.
Yes, of course. Okay, so Morgana is still in the dungeons, chained to a wall. Now, this was the part that I thought was a little bit more dehumanizing than just throwing her in. Like,
well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So she's chained to a wall. God knows how long she's been in there. And Arthur comes to set her free, tells him he's convinced Uther that she's learned her lesson, but says that she should tread carefully because he might not be able to get her out of a similar situation the next time. And then Morgana says, thank you. You're a better man than your father. You always have been. And
yeah, remember this later, Morgana.
Yeah, I'm, like, screaming at my TV, like, but why didn't you remember this in series 5?
I know. See, there's some shoddy character development there for you if you are going to nitpick.
But Morgana's gone so mad, like, she's a shell of herself, you know?
True.
And she's so focused on just the bigger picture. You know,
true,
she's not focused on the bigger picture. She's focused, like, you know, specifically on revenge, which is just so sad. But there you go. I mean, like, there's something that I really wish they would have brought back up at the end. But I think that's why a lot of people really thought that she was going to redeem herself in the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Because we were missing that piece with Arthur that really, you know, the beginning of the season would, or the series would set up.
At the same time, though, it's funny because Arthur almost addresses this right at the beginning of series 5, where he says, what happened to you, Morgana? Used to be so full of light.
Yes.
And then she said, I grew up. And it's just like, oh my God, her spirit is so broken. It's so sad and tragic.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a wonderful scene too. And I can't wait to rewatch series 5 as well.
I know, I don't want to do it. I can't.
I do, but not I don't. Again. I'm a masochist. What can I say? Okay. So after this, Gwen and Morgana are in her chambers, and Gwen realizes what Morgana's done for her after discovering marks from the iron cuffs on her wrists for her time in the dungeons. Morgana tries to give her the day off, but Gwen reveals that she's afraid to go home because Torin threatened to kill her if she didn't return the alchemy stone to him in the Darklands.
Just give her the stone!
And then she's going to kill him with the power of love. So...
It has to be done.
It's wonderful. Morgana tells Gwen that she's going to send the guards to meet him and that she shouldn't worry. So Gwen believes this, but really Morgana is taking matters into her own hands because she has the stone and now she realizes what it does. And she goes to meet Torin herself. Merlin feels when Morgana touches the stone and it kind of activates and then Merlin wakes up, which I thought was, I don't know. What did you think about this kind of little sub thing that was going on?
I'm not sure. Like, this is again the inconsistency of the magic in this early season, because why can Merlin feel this stone when he doesn't know when magic is performed in the castle usually?
Right.
Like, but I'm not really sure.
Doesn't he feel when Morgana is like later on in series 2 when she shatters the window, doesn't he feel that?
Maybe, but why only Morgana? Unless they're meant to be together.
Yeah, you know, they have that supernatural tie.
Yeah, Mordred is their child from the future.
Love child.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's in the fan fiction we'll be writing. What was I saying? I don't know. I mean, I feel like I was saying earlier that this is very Once Upon a Timey, where Merlin just has this, I feel like he had the exact same moral dilemma a few episodes ago, where he was like, oh, but Uther deserves to die and then Arthur can be king. Oh yeah, that was Excalibur in that episode, wasn't it? But then ultimately he decides to save Uther, where he doesn't actually end up doing anything, but I feel like it's probably just an important little thing to establish. Like, if he didn't have this, Merlin would have nothing to do in this episode and they would have to kill the show Morgana, so...
I'm sure Katie McGraw would have been all over that.
Yeah, it would have been awesome. Why not tell? We need a show now. Now that we've had Merlin, we need a show now from Queen Guinevere's perspective. Just like whole new cast.
Kind of like, the Mists of Avalon is all about the women.
Yeah.
So if you guys are interested in, Arthurian legend told in the point of view of all the women of Camelot, I highly recommend you read that, because that's it's a tome, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, Morgana goes into the woods to give Torin, she goes to meet Torin, like, I guess she's going to give him the stone, but we never really see that exchange. And Merlin, because he feels Morgana touching the stone and the powers being activated, he follows her into the woods to meet Torin. And when she gets there, Torin is 2 seconds away from killing Morgana, but she stops him by saying, if you kill me, you'll regret it, because I want Uther dead too. And she convinces Torin that she can help him get to Uther and that she's his ticket to getting rid of him once and for all. So this is kind of our first real taste of dark Morgana. What did you think when you were watching this?
Well, you know, I was just like, just do it. Just get rid
just
of him.
Do it.
But I think this is... I understand why they needed her to get to this point, but I felt like it was a bit too abrupt. Like, I get it. He threw her in chains. That was terrible. But from going to that to wanting to kill him, I feel like I guess he did have Tom killed, and Morgana's very, very close to Gwen, so that would set her off. But I feel like we needed a little bit more of just a look into Morgana's deterioration before we got to a point where she was ready to kill this guy who was practically her dad.
Right. And so this kind of leads into
he is her dad, but she doesn't know that.
This kind of leads into my other question for you. So do you just think that, like, just her kind of, like, rage on the surface is kind of what's making her not see reason at this point? Or do you really think that she wants Uther dead? Like, if Uther had died, would she have not even cared? Because that's kind of what it makes it sound like when she's making this deal with Torin, that she could care less about him now.
Well, I think what we see till the end, at the end of the episode, that she does have feeling, like, she does have loving feelings for Uther. They are there. So I think this is more acting out of a rage and out of a vengeance. You know, she's very vengeful, Morgana, as we've talked about before. And I think at this point, it's sort of like, you know what? You killed Gwen's dad. You deserve to die. Mm-hmm. And she's very short-sighted.
That's a good point. So Merlin has heard this entire conversation because he's followed her into the woods. And he goes back to the castle and goes straight to Kilgara for advice. And you know, Kilgara kind of says what he always does when Uther's mortality is at risk. He says, let Uther die so Arthur can live and they can fulfill their joint destiny together. And he has this great line while he's flying away that's, like, so ominous. And it says, free us both from this tyranny, Merlin. Free us all. So dramatic, right?
I know.
So Kilgara is constantly telling Merlin to stand aside and let Uther die. And, you know, his reasoning is kind of like, it does make sense, but at the same time, like, every time this happens, I kind of wonder to myself, does he really have Merlin and Arthur and Albion's best interests at heart, or is he just out for vengeance because Uther did trap him under the castle? So I wanted to ask you that. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure because, again, this is where my memory gets a little bit shady, and I feel like I remember at one point the dragon goes, like, evil, and we're like, oh my god, everything he's ever said is a lie. But then later in the show, it's like, oh no, that was actually, he's good, and it was all true, and I can't wait to get to that point in the rewatch because I'm super confused.
That's where Leon dies, you know?
Oh. And then comes back to life. Okay, well, that's going to be exciting. but, I mean, I think that the dragon wants to be free, and he might be. I mean, obviously, all these things he's saying about Arthur and Merlin and the beautiful future that they're going to build together, is all true, but I think Arthur probably isn't ready to be a king, and if Uther had died now, it probably would have led to a lot of problems, and we might not even have had the Golden Age for a long time because they would have been rushing things that weren't ready to come to pass, if you will. At the same time, though, I don't blame him. I mean, poor dragon. It's locked up in a cave, and it has been for like 20 years. I would try to get out, too, if I was the dragon.
With only Merlin to talk to,
right?
Like, how many thousands of years later.
And his mom.
Oh, and Gaius.
And Merlin's mom.
And Gaius, yes. Right, because Merlin. I mean, Hunith and Kilgara are obviously the best of friends.
Yep.
So Merlin is kind of confused after this talk with Kilgara, and this leads into a very heated conversation between him and Gaius about whether or not Uther is a good king. And at this point, Gaius kind of really defends Uther like he always does and almost makes him sound heroic in the way that, you know, he's been able to bring peace onto the land. And Merlin asks this really great question, and he kind of plays devil's advocate and says, but at what cost has this peace come? And he also asks, like, when will all the dying and stuff end? Because really, like, Uther's reign goes very hand in hand with lots of bloodshed. And Gaius says it will end when Arthur is king, but he's not ready yet. So you kind of already talked about how you don't think Arthur is ready. But I mean, like, at what point do we think that he kind of does become ready? Because I was trying to kind of think ahead and I couldn't really, you know, think of the point. I think he just kind of becomes it and we're not even sure when. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, to some extent, is he ever really ready? You know what I mean? But I think, you know what? No, I think that he becomes ready when he stops blindly following Uther's orders. And in some ways, this is already happening now. Like, he's already doing things that Uther wouldn't approve of. He's already lying to Uther. Like that time, was that last episode with the unicorn? Where they were just like, yeah, I got rid of that sorcerer.
Yes.
But he didn't really, like, he just kind of struck a deal with him or whatever. So, and that happens more and more. And I think the more nights that Arthur gathers around him, and the more quests he goes on alone, the more ready he's going to be. And then it comes a point when Uther does die. I mean, Arthur is just steps into that role of king sort of very beautifully, but he's tested a number of times through the series, and at each of those times he becomes a little bit more ready to take the throne. He probably could take the throne. He probably could do it, but it becomes easier the more times that he's faced challenges and has overcome them.
Mm-hmm. See, this is my whole thing. Like, I could see why Gaius would say that he's not ready, because I'm not really sure that he is. But at the same time, like, it makes me, that little voice inside of him that he has, you know, when you see him, like, conflicted, like, I feel like if he were able to listen to that, he could take the throne now at this point, you know, and it would be fine. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they're like, you know, everything kind of happens for a reason, especially on this show. You talk about destiny and, like, the paths that these characters take. And so there has to be a reason why he wasn't ready until the point that he was, you know. But my other question is, like, I mean, I just kind of, like, do you think that Gaius just defends Uther because they have a history together and he kind of sees, like, the good that Uther was before Egrain died? You know, like, it's just kind of so interesting that he kind of, I don't know, like, it almost kind of, like, it's almost like he doesn't feel for everybody that's been lost in Uther's plight to rid the world of magic. You know what I mean?
Sometimes,
like, when he does stuff like this.
Sometimes I feel like Gaius's character suffers the most because of this need to maintain, like, a status quo. And because, I mean, I remember when we watched the pilot episode and throughout season one, Gaius sort of, it's very polarizing. Either he's like Merlin's friend and accomplished, and the person that Merlin's like, oh, yay, you know, let's have dinner, you're like my family. And the other half of the time, he's just annoying and in the way. Mm-hmm. And there's no good reason for it, because we never do get Uther and Gaius, the early years flashback spinoff that we all wished were a thing.
And, isn't that so sad, though? I mean, because if you think of Gaius and Uther as a parallel to Merlin and Arthur, like, I feel like Gaius and Uther are what Merlin and Arthur could have been if Arthur didn't just break down and let Merlin be his friend.
Yeah, except that I think that Gaius does build up a lot of resentment for Uther, because Uther doesn't really... I mean, I would like to think that Merlin and Arthur could have been more equal than Gaius and Uther, because ultimately Uther does like Gaius, but he respects him, but he also doesn't. He keeps him
at arm's length away.
He respects Gaius to the extent that Gaius agrees with him, but he's never really willing to listen to Gaius unless Gaius is saying what he wants to hear. And Gaius is probably the person who can contradict him the most, but ultimately, like, Uther would have no problem putting Gaius in chains. I think he even does at one point, you know. I feel like that's really sad, and it's for this reason Gaius used magic. Gaius was allowed to survive the purge because they were friends and because he would help. He's almost like I'm trying to make a Game of Thrones comparison, like the Barristan Selmy, or like, I don't even know. I'm sort of, that's where my mind is at. Sorry, guys. But it just, Gaius, I don't think that there's a strong enough reason for Gaius to support Uther, at least not one that resonates with me. So at this point, I kind of feel like Gaius is just being contrary for the sake of being contrary. Like, because the story needs him to be that way, you know?
Yeah, I could totally see that. And again, it's just kind of like, you have to assume as the viewer that it comes from whatever history they did have together, you know, or whatever position it, like he feels like he needs to uphold as the court physician. But I don't know, his character kind of, I think at this point, like you said, like, it's kind of like hard to really like him and enjoy him, because he's still kind of really torn between doing what is kind of right and helping Merlin. Not to say that he should help Merlin kill Uther, but, you know, in other instances, like, there are instances where he should just help Merlin blindly and not really think about Uther. But he always does. Like, he always sides with Uther until kind of like the very end, when Merlin's plans tend to work out. And then he kind of begrudgingly tells Merlin that he did good. you know?
It's kind of funny because in some ways, we had this conversation too a few weeks ago, how Gwen kind of stands up for Uther sometimes because he's the king and just because his word should be law. And that makes sense for Gwen, but it doesn't make sense for Guys. Guys should be in a position where actually he was more critical of Uther's choices than anyone else.
I think so too. And I think that's why it's hard to stomach him being like this, you know?
Yeah.
So Merlin at this point is ready to sit back, as the dragon said, and let Morgana kill Uther. But he has a conversation with Gwen that makes him change his mind. He asks Gwen if she had the choice, if she could somehow swing it, would she have Uther killed? And Gwen says no, because what would that solve? That would make me a murderer and as bad as him. And ultimately, this is what kind of kicks Merlin into gear and makes him run after Morgana and Uther before Uther can be killed. Mm-hmm. So this is just a nice little scene that I wanted to bring up because it really kind of shows Gwen's wisdom once again.
Yeah.
You know, and just how rational she is.
But
and what a great queen she will be.
Absolutely. I thought this was a great scene for Gwen. But I think Merlin in some ways, like, I almost wish that instead of worrying about whether Uther should die, I almost wish that his deliberation would have been, can I allow Morgana to do this? Because he knows Morgana pretty well at this point. He knows that ultimately, even though she might feel a lot of vengeance, killing some, being responsible for someone's death, like, that changes you. And I know that they treat death very lightly on the show. Like, Merlin has killed people before, and that's had, like, no consequence. You know what I mean? Like, even Gwen and Morgana have, like, clobbered people to death.
Maybe it's just, like, self-defense. I don't know. It's so weird because it always kind of makes me think about Harry Potter a lot because they talk about, God, I feel, like, so bad for bringing this up because I feel like we just go into Harry Potter so much. But I feel like there are so many parallels, you know, and, like, when you think about making Horcruxes, mm-hmm. the reason that you're able to do that is because you tarnish your soul so much in the act of taking someone else's life. But I'm wondering if that has a lot to do with the way that you choose to take it, because I don't think Merlin takes life out of malice. Like, I think that's the difference between somebody who has no soul, you know, and who's just completely just inhumane about it, and somebody like Merlin or Gwen who only take life when it's absolutely necessary.
But I mean, I still, at the same time, this is very different from self-defense. This is a premeditated event. And I would have liked to have seen, I mean, Merlin obviously needed to have a part in this episode, even though it's mainly about Morgana. I would have preferred to have seen him struggle with, should I allow Morgana to kill Uther and solve a lot of our problems? But by doing that, she would be tarnishing her quote unquote soul, and she would embrace the darkness. You know, that would have been interesting to see as well.
Could you imagine how messed up she would be if, like, you know, she had Uther killed, not only that, but then finds out that he's her father later?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that is just, I think that would have been what would have killed her more, you know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy for us to say now, like, they should have done it this way. Oh. But, you know, it would have been interesting to have seen.
Meanwhile, Uther and Morgana are attempting to make amends, and they ride off to visit Morgana's father's grave. And this is where Morgana has made plans with Torrin and the bandits to have Uther murdered because, you know, everything's done so dramatically on this show.
Yes.
It's just like, of course, he has to die on the place that Morgana's father has been laid to rest. But not to make light of this whole scene, because we actually get a very touching conversation between Uther and Morgana, where Uther is pretty much, you know, waxing poetic about the truest friend he ever had, which is Morgana's father, which I think is really interesting considering that he was
knowing what we know now.
Yeah. Anyway,
we shared everything.
That's horrible. He tells Morgana that her will is as strong as his own, and he confesses that it was wrong to have Tom killed. And he also tells Morgana that her counsel and advice is important to him, and that he will learn to value her opinion more. He says, I know I'm not an easy man, and my temper blinds me sometimes. So we've talked about kind of Uther being the master of telling people what they want to hear when they need to hear it. So do you think that he's being sincere here because he knows that Morgana is his daughter, or is he just kind of telling her what she wants to hear?
I don't know. I want to say that he's sincere. At the same time, though, I find it hard to see him admitting that killing Tom was wrong, because he was, as far as he knew, I mean, again, I feel bad for sticking up for him, but as far as he knew, he was following his own laws. And I feel like, yeah, it was wrong to kill Tom, but it was also wrong to burn all those children at the stake for, you know, stuff they hadn't even done. So it just felt like he was trying to appease her with the whole Tom thing. But I think he was speaking the truth about the rest of it. I think he definitely sees a lot of himself in Morgana, as he should, since she's his daughter. And I think in some ways, like, I've always felt like Uther respects Morgana more than Arthur in a lot of ways. And maybe I have this whole theory that maybe one of the reasons he's sometimes disappointed in Arthur is because he sees some of the fire in Morgana that he doesn't see that in Arthur, because Arthur is a lot like his mother.
Mm-hmm. It's so sad because it's like, I feel like Uther resents Arthur because he's supposed to like look like his mother, but then also just because he has a lot of her personality traits. Yeah. And it's just like, what a sad way to live, because it's not something that Arthur can help, and he's such a good person. So yeah, I just think it's just so sad because it's not anything that Arthur can help. And then meanwhile, it's almost like Uther holds it against him.
Yeah. And I think that Uther, I mean, this is where we come in with the problems of the patriarchy, is that, however you say that word, is that Uther, I think, if this world was a little more equal, he would make Morgana his heir. Like, I feel like Morgana, the only thing she has going against her is that she's a woman. And we see this a lot in the show, and I actually really love the way that they deal with that. The fact that she's a woman, but she has so much intelligence and so much power. She's almost like, oh my God, another Game of Thrones parallel. It's just like Potter Thrones over here.
Potter Thrones.
but she's Cersei from Game of Thrones in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Like Cersei, Jaime, and Tywin are like Arthur, Morgana, and Uther without the incest. Well, almost, actually, but you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of parallels in that dynamic there. And I think that ultimately Morgana is the child that he is technically, she's most like him. And he knows that.
That's actually a really good point and a really good parallel, because I think the only thing that's stopping Morgana from being more like Cersei is that she's not as conniving at this point in the series.
And she doesn't have a lot of, I mean, that's the difference in Thrones. I mean, the universe is more expansive, and we do meet what's her name later on, you know, that female Queen Annis, is that her name?
Oh, yes, Queen Annis, yeah.
So, and obviously we know that Gwen comes to great power. So we know that that world is out there. But at this point, the world is so small that there aren't a lot of people Morgana could be conspiring against. And Morgana's also younger. I mean, she's not married. She doesn't have children. She doesn't, at this point, have anything to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So pretty much the way this episode ends is that Torrin is sneaking up on Morgana and Uther while they're having this really, really deep conversation where Uther is pretty much begging for her forgiveness. And Uther is just about to be stabbed by Torrin when Morgana has a change of heart and she kills Torrin before he can kill Uther. And that's pretty much how this episode ends.
And meanwhile, Merlin is off somewhere like knocked out or whatever.
Right. He was trying to stop it, but then he realized he didn't even have to because Morgana came to her senses.
And, yeah.
It was just a really, like we said kind of earlier in the episode, like it's like this episode on the surface is supposed to be Gwen-centric, but it really becomes a journey for Morgana.
It really does. And poor Gwen. I mean, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really talk about that, but obviously it's very, very tough for her. And we also kind of, I mean, the Gwen-Morgana friendship moments were also really, really good in this episode. Gwen is horrified when she finds out what happened to Morgana. And the fact that Morgana tries to hide that for her just speaks volumes as well. You know, she's not looking for sympathy.
There's a point there, and she, you know, Gwen is kind of berating her for even thinking to stick her neck out on the line for her, because she couldn't even imagine anybody, you know, being harmed because of her. And she says to Morgana, if anything had happened to you, and then it kind of, you know, trails off. But it just, again, speaks volumes to the relationship that they do have, which is very unconventional for a maid and a lady.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So any other thoughts about this episode or anything you wanted to bring up?
It definitely wasn't my favorite of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like all of the episodes have been so solid. Like, this was really solid, too. But definitely, I mean, this is probably one that I wouldn't be considering, like, in my top anything. But it was good, and it sort of, it sets things in motion. I mean, Gwen's world has fallen apart, and she's now alone. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I obviously don't remember if there's a lot of space for that to be explored, but it'll be interesting to see how she sort of deals with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, if I remember correctly, they kind of brush it off you never really understood why, but I think we'll probably get to that, as we continue on in our rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for this week. We will be talking next week about the final episode of series one. So that's going to be exciting.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap the show with some listener comments and feedback from you guys. And just as a reminder, you are always free to write to us and let us know if you agree or disagree with anything that we talked about. If you want to bring up something that we might have missed, if you're watching the show for the first time and you want to write in with any of your theories about what you think is going to happen, like, we'll accept that too, because I think that would be really cool to read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we kind of already know what's going to happen, so it's hard for us to kind of remember what we thought was going to happen back then. We'll run through the contact information now, and then we'll remind you of it later. You can tweet us if your comments are rather short. We're at twitter.com/talkscamelot. That is twitter.com/talkscamelot on Twitter. And you can also leave rather lengthy comments for us in the show notes on hypeable.com. So there's a comment section after every episode that we release, and you're free to write to your heart's content on there. Although if your questions are rather long, we might cut them down for show purposes. But those are two great ways for you guys to keep in contact with us. And we really love your listener comments and stuff, and we try and include them on the show. So with that being said, we're going to get into the first comments, and I'm going to let Selena take that.
Kimberly has a comment for episode 24, which was our rewatch of episode 1.7. She says, "Thank you so much for this podcast. I was definitely feeling down that Merlin ended, but this makes me feel much better. I just listened to this episode, and now I wish I didn't have to wait for more to come out. There is a behind the scenes with Colin Morgan about him doing his own stunts when he is flung against the wall in this episode of Merlin. Also, I couldn't stop laughing with you for most of this episode. Keep it up." I believe that was me who was wondering that, because this was the one where, yeah, he was flung against the wall. Right. And they flung him against the wall. And I remembered there being something behind the scenes, but I couldn't remember. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Kimberly, for bringing that to our attention.
And also a great way to highlight all the behind the scenes footage that does exist, especially for, there's a lot for series one and series two. So they're on the DVD box sets if you have those, and you can probably also find them online if you don't own them. So.
They're not on the Danish DVD box sets. I would just like to point this out. There's nothing on the box sets except for the episodes. No commentaries, no nothing.
Missing out.
I know.
This episode had me giggling. Nice way to start the weekend. I completely agree that had they explored the Morgana relationship, things could have worked out pretty much the same way, just with a little bit of extra meat. I actually thought that that's where they were going when watching the first couple of seasons. I suppose that was never Merlin's purpose, though, and his destiny was with Arthur. I see a glimpse of this at the end of The Lady of the Lake when he is so heartbroken over losing Freya. But Arthur really tries to cheer him up, and Merlin refocuses his attention back onto Arthur. Such a sweet moment, if a bit sad. That's a very good point. I'm really excited, actually, to watch that episode in season
two. That's a very good episode, you know, because that's a very good thought. Oh my God, that's a very good comment. That's what I was trying to say. And I think it's very interesting, because that's always what I wondered about Merlin. And I mean, I don't know if you know this, I'm probably one of the only Merlin fans who's actually not excited about the Freya storyline or episode at all, because I just feel like it's so contrived. Like, I think that even though I would have really liked to have seen a Merlin Morgana romance, because I like romances that develop over time. Like, I like seeing the build up to them. I like sort of knowing that, like the Arthur Gwen thing, like, you know, you see it coming slowly, and then once it's there, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's a bit anticlimactic. But I like to seeing it build up. And I think that the whole Freya thing, like, that just seemed like such a deviation, because as Jamie Fraser says, Merlin's world really revolves around Arthur, and romance was never his purpose. So throwing this random ass girl in that he falls for in 5 seconds and then killing her off in all the span of 40 minutes, I was like, this is pointless to me. I can't use this for any shipping related purposes here. So yeah. You know what I mean?
I don't really know if I necessarily like, I don't think I necessarily like the episode because I ship them so hard it hurts. You know what I mean?
Maya. Frerlin.
Wait, what?
Frerlin.
But I think that the reason that I, and we'll get into this when we get to the episode, but I think the reason that I really just enjoy that episode is because it's just like, what phenomenal acting early on by Colin Morgan. Like, that is just like, the emotion that is portrayed in that episode is amazing. And like, I guess maybe like, if you're thinking logically, a lot of that does get taken away when you realize that they've been in love for 45 minutes, but...
I mean,
it's still a wonderful episode. And I think, you know, it's like one of those like hit and miss type things that where the creators tried to include a very important storyline from the myths, where, you know, Merlin and the Lady of the Lake did kind of have a little thing going on in certain versions of the legends, but it kind of fell flat because like we don't see the build.
And she doesn't come back. They sort of set her up.
Well,
to...
she does. She's the Moaning Myrtle, you know,
in the flash forward to the 21st century. Yeah. But I mean, and just to, I mean, not that we have to spend a lot of time in this comment, but I think that ultimately, I mean, I would have liked to see a Merlin Morgana romance and everything, but I think ultimately my favorite friendship dynamic relationship, whatever you want to call it, is obviously Merlin and Arthur. So I'm not really too heartbroken about that. You know what I mean?
Right. Next comment.
Zoe has a comment for our rewatch of episode 10. She says, "Hi guys, I'm a little behind with the podcast and I just listened to episode 24 and I loved the bit where you were talking about how the Merlin feels just hit you sometimes when you're going about your daily life because it's so true. I'll just be sat at work or something and suddenly I'll be tearing up because Merlin. Like you said, with Harry Potter it was like, oh, that was such a great story but it has all been tied up and we know that all our favorite characters are all happy so I will let it... Well, unless your favorite character is Fred. Anyway, no. I'm sorry. I'm continuing. but
Deeper
Merlin.
Feelings for Fred Weasley.
never going to get over it. Also, I saw Colin in The Tempest on Saturday. It was just the best thing ever, and his singing and dancing was so adorable. I just can't. I just can't anymore with him. Frantically trying to rearrange to go to London again, which should be easy as I'm only in the north of England, but it's not because of a stupid thing called work. Oh, thank you, Zoe. That was a wonderful comment.
I am sitting over here like, oh, good for you. You have to rearrange to work and you're on the same continent.
Oh, but I think... I mean, I don't know about you, but the Merlin feels are still hitting me. Like, I will block it out for days, and then suddenly I'll be opening a kitchen cabinet, and I'll be like, Arthur is dead and Merlin is alone.
Oh my
it's
God.
Ridiculous.
I'm telling you guys, Merlin is like the ex-boyfriend you can't get over.
Yes.
It's like music for me is what gets me. Like, sometimes I'll be listening to somebody and it's like, oh, man. It's just stop. Lydia says, "Hey, Pamela, Jess, Patricia, and Selena. I'm only on series 2 of Merlin, but I've quickly fallen in love with the show. I'm really enjoying listening to your podcast, or at least the semi-spoiler-free ones."
Whoops.
And I know. I'm like, which ones are semi-spoiler-free? Oh, Lydia, I really hope we haven't ruined it for you. Anyway, back to her comment. She says, "I want to finish the rest of the series so I can hear all of your wonderful commentary. Part of me wants to put off the end as long as possible because I know heartbreak awaits. Anyway, I'm excited to be getting into a new fandom and wanted you all to know that you're my favorite Hypeable podcast."
Oh, yay!
It's so sweet. We're all like warm fuzzies over here, by the way. And finally, she says, "Well done and keep up the great work. P.S. I totally fangirled when Talks of Pamela followed back on Tumblr." Oh, thanks, Lydia. We fangirl.
We follow you guys back. Of course we do. You guys are awesome.
You know, you guys are the reason that we do this show, because if not, you know, Andrew would kick us off.
It's just so true. Oh my God. I was talking to him at some point. And he was like, you know, we should really take Merlin off the category list. And I was like, no, you can't. It's not over yet in America.
Well, also, like, he can't because I'm just like, Andrew, like, what other actor on the site, actor alone, gets like 500,000 likes on social media?
I know.
Project.
It's so true. But I mean, thank you, Lydia. And I want to say, I mean, I know that this is, surely nobody will notice if they're not Merlin fans. So I can say that this is definitely one of the podcasts that I do that I enjoy doing the most. So I love that you enjoy listening to it too.
And then we have a podcast review. Well, we have a review for our own podcast from iTunes.
I love it. Okay, I just want to say, first of all, this is by KimboB17, and I love the title. It gives us 5 stars, brilliant. It says, a podcast, ? And I love the existentialism in that, you know. A podcast, is it? You know? So that's good, first of all. And her comment is, I love this podcast. It is so much fun to listen to people who love Merlin just like me. Before listening to this podcast, I didn't understand the appeal of podcasts, but now I just can't wait for each new episode to come out. This is a must listen for any diehard Merlin fan. Thank you so much for doing that. And thank you for taking to iTunes to review this show, because iTunes reviews and giving us 5 stars is one of the ways that we can help promote the shows, you know, outside of Hypable, outside of Tumblr, just any random Merlin fans that are sort of out there, like, sort of scrambling along going, but Merlin, it's not really over in my heart. And they need that community. They can find us much easier that way. So anything you do sort of help just grows the community of the show. And we really appreciate that.
Right. And just as a little bit of a side note, we just want to say, like, we really love, like, getting comments like this, not because we need our ego stroked or anything like that, but just because, like, I feel like sometimes we do this show and we kind of forget that you guys are out there if you don't write in. And the biggest compliment, like, we can ever get from you guys who are, like, you know, true super fans of the show is that you feel like we are as big as fans as you guys. And I think, like, you know, Selena and I, we're not strangers to podcasting. Like, we've both been on other shows and stuff, and sometimes it's hard for fans to feel like they're listening to other fans talk about a show and not like we're just, you know, like being super critical about other things. So the fact that you guys like enjoy us and you feel like we are fans like you, it just is a really big compliment. So thank you guys so much. Like we really appreciate that a lot, and we don't say it enough. So I think that wraps up the show this week. What do you think?
I think so. Yeah, I would say so. I'm stroking my chin right now. Just a podcast ? The end ?
Anyway, I think that's going to be the title of the show.
A yes. Perfect.
All right. Well, we do want to run through all of our contact information again so you guys know exactly where to reach us if you want to be in contact with us. And like we said before, we love all of your feedback and your listener comments. So please write in and tell us what you like about the show or anything that's on your mind, because we love reading that. So first up, you can follow us on Twitter. We tweet at all of the latest Merlin news story links that come from Hypable.com. So it's a great way for you guys to keep up with all the Merlin news. And it's also a great way for you guys to contact with us. You can follow us at twitter.com/talkcamelot. That is twitter.com/TALKSCAMELOT. You can also leave rather lengthy comments for us on the show notes on Hypable.com and just leave them under the latest episode. So if you go to the archives, whatever episode is right at the top, leave your comments right there, even if you're listening to a past episode, because that's the one we're going to check on most. And it's just easier for us to pull comments from there to include on later shows. You can also follow us on Tumblr, like we mentioned. Who was it? I think it was Lydia who said she got followed back on Tumblr. We do follow all of you guys back because you guys reblog lots of awesome content. And, you know, we all want to be friends and enjoy all the awesome Merlin content that's on Tumblr. So follow us on there. And you can find us at talksofcamelot, all one word, .tumblr.com. We'll have a link in the show notes as well for that, so you guys can just click and head on over to our Tumblr page to enjoy everything we put up on there. And again, we do want to remind you that we really do appreciate when you guys take the time to rate and review us on iTunes. Like Selena said, it's a great way to get the word out about our show and get other Merlin fans involved. So if you guys have 5 seconds and can get onto iTunes, rate and review us on there, that'd be really great. And we really appreciate all the love and support you guys send our way. So that's it for this week. And we will see you guys next time, where we will be discussing season 1, episode 13, the last episode of series 1 of Merlin. Yay!
Oh my God! Bye, guys!